Hey, what is going on? It is Crypto Bobby. Hope you're having a great day, great night, wherever you're watching or listening in from. Today, I have a special conversation for you lined up. It is with Richard Burton, the founder of Balance.io. And the reason that I was excited about this conversation is I've actually had a chance to meet Richard on a few different occasions in New York at a number of different meetups and things like that. And Richard is building at Balance.io something that is leveraging a number of different protocols, platforms, products in the crypto ecosystem. I think he has a really interesting point of view on just the Ethereum ecosystem and the overall crypto asset ecosystem as a whole. And he's also going through the process of building Balance.io without an ICO, without a token sale, and raising money and trying to build a business the traditional way. So I thought it lent itself to a very good, very interesting conversation. So hope you enjoy all of that in the discussion today with Richard. Let's go.
Yeah, just I stumbled across the rabbit hole when I met Gavin Wood and Vitalik in 2014. Helped out with a few little mock-ups, did a little bit of work for the kind of people working on Ethereum, and then kind of forgot about it until the crowd sale, and then kind of jumped back down the rabbit hole last year when the prices were going crazy, and I wanted to understand why, realized that there was room for different designs and different kinds of software, and ended up starting a small company called Balance, and we're making user interfaces for Ethereum and other protocols as well.
Yeah, and I think you have a really interesting perspective on the space, especially I think within the Ethereum ecosystem, because you actually are building a business and products based on Ethereum and leveraging a lot of the protocols, which we'll definitely get into. But for anybody who's not familiar with what Balance is, what are you and your team trying to do at Balance? What's like the gist of what you're building?
Yeah, so what we've launched is a tool called Manager, which allows you to manage your existing wallets. So things like MetaMask or Ledger and Trezor. So you can think of it as a kind of similar product to MyCrypto, with a slightly different take on the information we present, and far fewer features than MyCrypto, but perhaps a little bit more kind of cleanly presented. Mm-hmm. And then we're also launching our own mobile wallet, which is similar in some aspects to some of the mobile Ethereum wallets out there. But one thing that we've tried to kind of spearhead and do a little bit differently is the ability to use your mobile wallet to log into dApps on the web, just using a QR code. And this will allow people to kind of use any browser, so they don't necessarily have to use a browser extension to log into dApps. And then when they're kind of confirming a transaction, such as a purchase on CryptoKitties or a trade on Radar Relay, they can confirm it on their phone.
Yeah, I think that's, I know when we had met maybe a week or two ago and you got a chance to show me that, I thought that was pretty interesting. And one of the things you had written a blog post about that, and I think that there's a couple different companies. I think that's something that just in my own like day job at AirSwap, we're trying to kind of do this with the widget that we have as well. But where you had talked in the blog post about there are so many different utility tokens and nobody's actually utilizing those tokens for their intended purpose and for the utility that they have, and hopefully that the Wallet Connect will be something that actually enables people to do that and takes out some of the friction. I think the way you're approaching things with that is pretty interesting, because there's such an opportunity. Obviously it's a bet on these utility tokens at some point in time being used for their intended purpose, but taking a lot of the friction away, I think is pretty admirable.
Yeah, I don't have a strong position on how many utility tokens will be useful, certainly not from the user's perspective. But if people in general are going to use distributed applications, mm-hmm. or kind of decentralized applications or dApps is the kind, yep. of shorthand for them, I think that the Chrome extension has done a marvelous job of getting us from like zero to one, and it's like shown us how things could work. But if we kind of think about cast our minds forward and into a world where we can handle hundreds of millions of users, I think people are more comfortable with kind of confirming things on their phone or interacting with their phone. Certainly when I log into my bank, I have to kind of confirm a transaction on my phone in order to get it to send. And so that flow of kind of doing something on the web and then picking up the phone to confirm it is something that people are quite familiar with. Whereas we found with user testing that people are not as familiar with installing, managing, and kind of using an extension on a browser. And so that's really where Wallet Connect came out of, let's take a pattern that's very common in Asia, which is to log in with a QR code and kind of confirm things on your phone. similar to how you log in with WhatsApp. And let's apply that to dApps that interact with Ethereum. So yeah, if you'd like to use it, it's kind of all available to use now. And if you go to the Balanced Twitter account, you can see how to get on the beta testing for our wallet. So you can try our wallet connect out for yourself.
For sure. Yeah, I'll definitely have a link in the description to that too. And one thing that you've talked about is kind of creating like an open source bank. And I think that's a pretty interesting model. But can you talk a little bit about like what the vision is for an open source bank, how that would work, and kind of how you're building that right now, really?
Yeah, I guess what I would say is that a lot of other people are building parts of that open source bank. So if you look at 0x doing exchange or AirSwap like yourselves, you are building the exchange functionality that's built into loads mm-hmm. of different banks on a set of smart contracts. And then if you look at Dharma, which is a kind of lending protocol built on Ethereum, they're trying to describe debt as a set of smart contracts. And then there's other ones. We work with someone called Nexus Mutual who are doing insurance on the chain. And then there's ways to earn interest with things like One Protocol or Cosmos staking coming down the pipe. And so if we zoom out and look at like all the banks that exist in the world, each of them recreate these kind of major functions of a ledger, the ability to send and receive, the ability to exchange, the ability to do kind of margin trading. And all of that kind of got collapsed into a set of very esoteric kind of slow smart contracts running on Ethereum. But usually technology is very good at kind of speeding things up and reducing the cost. And that's really exciting because it means that instead of every bank needing to recreate these pieces of software, it's now kind of common economic infrastructure for everyone. And what's required now is like a user interface that wraps some of these things up together. And so one way of kind of viewing what we do is initially the wallet, which is absolutely true. But effectively, like long term, if people end up kind of conducting most of their financial life in crypto, in the next kind of 10 years, that I think that's quite a possibility for certain people. Then you kind of have a bank that's kind of built entirely on open source tooling. And so rather than a bank where you need to buy a big system from Temenos off the shelf to get mm-hmm. going and need to get approval from the regulators, you can simply fork open source software and run it on these kind of public protocols. And I just think that's the what happened to the operating system and that amazing war between Linux and Windows is about to happen between the kind of crypto community and the banking system. And I think that what will end up is not that banks are dead or they're all destroyed yeah. or everything, but just that there'll be lots more options and lots kind of more competition. And just in the way that Linux kind of led to Android, you couldn't have predicted that at the beginning. I think something similar is going to happen with this idea of open source banking.
For sure. And I think, one of the things you talked about as far as kind of not necessarily centralizing, but like bringing a lot of the different pieces together, like you'd said, like the exchange function of crypto loans with Dharma, a number of different kind of components to kind of bringing that maybe under like one user interface. So it's a little bit easier for people to interact with. How do you go about like evaluating those types of products? Is that like an easy thing? I'm kind of interested to like, I know there's a lot of different maybe options out there right now. There's a lot of companies that say, or there's a lot of projects that say they can do X, Y, Z. How do you go out and kind of find which ones actually work the best for like that specific use case, or which ones you feel like might be most popular that you should actually bring into one interface?
Yeah, there's a few ways I approach it. I mean, I still do not fully understand the Ethereum white paper or really have the kind of mathematical or technical background to fully appreciate what these protocol developers and mechanism designers do. And so I always approach it from a different angle. And when I first met Gavin and Vitalik, they struck me as very interesting people. And it's really, I start with the people. So one thing I recommend people do if they're really excited about the industry and they want to find standout projects is to kind of listen to the whole of the Epicenter podcast or some of the other podcasts that they really like and just get that catalog of the industry in their head. And then you can really hear who kind of and look back on the success or failure of those different people who are on the podcast and kind of get quite a good index for who you believe in. And then secondly, that's just like how I've built up my mental model. And then usually I'll kind of find people's Twitter accounts. So not only just look through what they're posting, but look at all the things they're liking, and you get a kind of real feel for like what their mental model is and the way they view the world. You know, obviously stuff can be like frivolous, but what I mean is if you scroll through like 5,000 of people's like tweets, it's amazing how much you can tell about how someone thinks. And then another angle is just I think it's really easy to tell whether somebody's kind of leaning towards the kind of missionary side of this whole project or the kind of mercenary side. There are some people who just kind of want to make money and leave, and or buy a Lambo and leave, or kind of get their Ferrari and disappear. And then there are some people who are here and they want to raise money so that they can get something done. And so money is a kind of means to an end. And so when you kind of ask somebody like why they're raising X amount of money and they don't really have a good answer, and you know that number is kind of 30, 40, 100 million, it's pretty easy to say that either they're a bit kind of mercenary in their approach, or they're too scared for this thing to fail. And so the common thread with nearly all of the projects that we're kind of integrating with or backing is that these people seem like they're doing it for a real reason. They're kind of more in this kind of missionary mindset. They're raising a sensible amount of capital, which I think speaks volumes about what they're doing. And they're shipping. They're just really focused on getting things done. They're not always appearing on, all over the world in different conferences. They're not partying loads. They're generally just getting their heads down and getting stuff built. So I really start from the people and kind of work outwards, because it's the people who write software that runs these protocols. So it's something where I have a feel for it. So that's kind of where I begin.
And one thing you just mentioned was some of the excessive fundraising that's gone on, and we can dive into that a little bit more. But your business in particular, I would say one of the few, although maybe this is probably becoming more common with a lot of the regulatory uncertainty in the industry, but you've chosen, and you chose a while ago too, if I'm correct, I think I'm correct. I think you had a Medium post a while ago about why you weren't doing a token sale. So you decided not to do an ICO. You're looking for, maybe you're in the process, I'm not sure, of traditional fundraising or kind of going through that method. Why did you choose not to do a token sale or an ICO? Would love to hear your thoughts on that, and just in regards to kind of the industry as a whole.
Yeah. First of all, I think that having helped out a little bit with Ethereum, I'm somewhat familiar now with like where a sale makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of to kick off a network. And we are not currently designing a network. We're designing user interfaces. So when I looked at the various other people who were designing user interfaces, it felt like they were kind of tacking a network onto their user interface and using that as a kind of fundraising excuse. I've not seen a wallet introduce a token that makes one bit of sense to me, and certainly I've not invested in any of them. A lot of them kind of flag these tokens as kind of ecosystem access tokens or kind of staking security tokens without any kind of insight into where that security would come from just having a digit in an ERC-20 record. Last year we did want to raise some money because we wanted to hire some people and try and build some software. But what felt right to us was around a $1.4 million round, which was largely raised through crowdfunded equity. And that felt right both because we didn't really know exactly what we were going to build. And also as a CEO, I'm extremely inexperienced. I've only been doing this for a year and a half. And I've seen much more experienced CEOs kind of operate and really successfully, and even those people raise in stages. They usually raise a small seed and then they get some experience, and then they raise some more and they get some experience. And then another kind of backstop to that is we'd been doing, before we raised any money, we'd been doing a bit of freelancing for the Filecoin sale, and there felt like an interesting project where it had a huge potential but then was sold to kind of already rich people and venture capitalists. And so that really kind of torched the community. And so there was this real contrast between how I benefited from Ethereum, how I wanted to raise from a community, and I didn't want to like shill a token that didn't make any sense. And so that kind of landed us with crowdfunded equity. And I'm glad we did that because I think that there's not many people that can say they're really proud of the token that they sold. And token engineering is such a young kind of industry and a young discipline. Many times it's really easy to tell if someone's full of it because they're talking about all the things you can do on the blockchain, where the really advanced people say, how little can you do on the chain to get this to work? You know, really trying to be precious with that resource. And I'm only just beginning to learn the very kind of bare minimums of that. So it strikes me as amazing when I see these other projects so confident that they need 30 to 100 million in capital to do their kind of ecosystem token. And it makes no sense to me. And another thing is, no one has explained to me why you can't do these things in stages, you know, kind of mint a billion tokens, sell 3 million of them to begin with, and then, you know, reserve like another 97 for the company and just sell them off as the network gains more value. And I think the reason is people are a bit too greedy. And so we're in this weird place where nearly all of our kind of ostensible competitors are extremely well capitalized. And we're looking to kind of actually build a real business that kind of issues financial mm-hmm. services on this open source system. And I think I would much rather kind of wind the company down than sell it a token dishonestly. And maybe that's just the way I am, but that's how I feel about it.
I think there's a lot of good points there too. And, you know, one thing, and I've been having a lot of conversations recently, but I think there are, and like you said, the token engineering or token economics, whatever people want to call it, is such a young, really unknown discipline. People are pretty much trying to figure it out and trying to see what works, what doesn't work, and trying to learn on the fly as much as possible. But there are a lot of scenarios where, you know, companies are, projects are applying a token kind of in the middle of an ecosystem, and it really just adds friction to it. And it's pretty apparent, or looking, maybe it wasn't so apparent 6-8 months ago, but now you can kind of look back and see it's pretty apparent that it was simply a fundraising mechanism. And I think a lot of people are kind of learning as things go that, you know, if there isn't really a built-in true utility or reason for the token, it's not going to do, you know, it's not going to be used, and it's not going to do too well from maybe like a quote unquote investment standpoint as well. So that's something I've been, you know, watching recently and been, I think, pretty interesting to see pan out.
Yeah, definitely. And conversely, kind of among this enormous shit fest of shit coins, there are a few that are really thoughtfully done. And you know that kind of in 5 years, there'll be 1,000x up mm-hmm. because they have interesting network effects. They're delivering real value to humans or machines at some point. And they're kind of built by people who are really conscientious about the way they're going about it. I'm not one of these network designers, and I'm the only idea I have for a network right now is a password reset protocol. But that is something that's still very early days, and you can bet your bottom dollar that if we do decide to kind of do a token for it, we will have the network working. We will have like fleshed it out. We've invested in kind of making it functioning. And the token would be the last piece for us rather than the first.
Yeah.
And so that's the only idea for a network I have. And I'm simply not smart enough to make it. So maybe we work with people to help us. But yeah, this is a kind of separate thread totally.
And you had mentioned, I think, when you had talked about raising your maybe initial round, you know, one of the big purposes for that was actually hiring. I would love to hear just kind of your thought process about hiring in this industry right now, because I feel like I've seen you post a little bit on Twitter every once in a while about hiring talent. Is that a difficult process? Is it tough to find talent for you? What's been the experience like so far just building a business considering talent in this industry?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I have too much to offer there of advice, because we've not been hiring super aggressively. Mm-hmm. And kind of the people I know kind of already in the industry, people I know personally and are kind of coming into this industry. But looking at the area in general, one thing I would observe is that kind of Ethereum and many of these protocols were kind of put together by a ragtag group of people available, but not all of them were necessarily. I put myself right at the top of that pile, where I was a pretty junior two-bit designer. And I couldn't get a job, but I was, you know, there to help and try to help out with Ethereum. And just as I was a pretty terrible designer, I'm kind of learning when I listen to much more experienced software engineers look at some of these underlying systems and protocols that these things are kind of hacked together and built on fairly shaky ground. But it's amazing that it survived despite that. It kind of shows the resilience of the protocol itself that it's still functioning. So as a kind of at a higher level, what excites me is that now we all know that a scalable global computer is a kind of $1 trillion prize. You know, we kind of saw it move towards $500 billion and then ease off. We can kind of see that secure computation running on a network incentivized by tokens that's unstoppable feels like an extremely valuable thing to humanity, or this kind of interchain like system. That now we're just seeing just a staggering amount of academic attention for consensus algorithms and cryptography and distributed systems, and very smart people are getting involved and leaving Google and Facebook and all the other places. So if there's anything that's happened with this kind of huge mania, it's just that it's got the attention of smart people. And I see more and more friends on Facebook kind of flipping to some kind of crypto related company. So I'd say from an outside point and an observer, it's exciting because the value that they create will kind of only be realized 5 years down the road. So we're in for an interesting kind of next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. And going off that point, what are you most excited about, let's say, you know, in the near future here? Are there any, you know, projects or specific just advancements in this industry that is really exciting to you? And then I'll follow that up afterwards with, conversely, what do you think maybe is the most overrated thing in the industry? But let's start off with, what are you most excited about?
Yeah, the first thing that I would kind of point out is that a big realization for me is that what we have now is slow, expensive, but trustworthy and unstoppable computing. And that's quite interesting where for the first time in history, we have this kind of trustworthy, unstoppable computer that we can run code on and verify it. And so we're kind of just in this interesting phase where we're discovering what you do with a trustworthy, unstoppable computer and also what you don't do. And the slow and expensive part is what usually technology always changes. So while I can't speak to the precise breakthrough that might lead to some kind of massive scalability change, you know, just to see projects like Dfinity and Cosmos and the incredible amount of research going on Ethereum and scaling and layer two and just different opportunities such as, I think it's Notation Labs with their new protocol that uses recursive ZK snarks and this kind of crazy collapsing of data down into sets of mathematical proofs. And then there's just an Algorand and like all of these other interesting opportunities. It feels to me like just with the sheer size of the prize, the scalability is going to get solved. And so then what excites me is like, how does usability and scalability meet? You know, if we have this kind of fast performance system, how do we get it into the hands of millions of people? And so actually one of the projects that I'm most excited about, you know, just from a kind of infrastructure level is SpaceX kind of distributing their internet in the next 5 years. And so at that point, you kind of have unstoppable global internet at a kind of relatively affordable price. And that's when you can really kind of make a dent in things is to kind of beam down these financial services and trustworthy computing services from the skies into Android phones and really start to kind of give people full sovereignty of assets that they've never been able to have before. So it's this kind of convergence of the internet kind of seeping into every kind of inch of the world and this huge prize around scalability for kind of trustworthy computing. And then our role as a designer is to kind of do some usability on top of that. I think it all wraps together into quite an interesting story where people can opt out of many government services and feel much more secure simply because the smart contracts cannot screw them over because they were designed correctly and cannot be stopped. Now, that might be a bit utopian, but at least feels achievable actually to me in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I think there's a long way to go, but there the far out vision is it's an interesting one, and I think like you said, it might be a little bit far out, but hey, you know, it doesn't seem impossible, especially kind of considering where we've come from. But going to the other side, maybe I was gonna say going to the other side of I don't even where I was going with this, but going to the other side of the argument. The most overrated thing or just something that is super hyped up right now, is there anything in specific that, you know, maybe a lot of people are talking about you just don't think is as either worthwhile of a time investment or a monetary investment that a lot of people are focusing on? Would love to hear that too.
Yeah, it's really sad to see that things like kind of Ripple, Tron and EOS are still even with us, let alone kind of multi-billion dollar projects. I mean, that in each kind of experiment there's some kind of kernel of something interesting. It's not that it's entirely a scam, but there's so many mistakes with the way in which they've kind of built their community, built the project and kicked it off. And kind of one heuristic there I'd love to encourage people to focus on is Bitcoin raised nothing to get it off the ground. Ethereum raised about 16 million and it promptly dropped to like 9 to really get it to be one. And then you've got things like Tron, which is several hundred million. EOS, kind of multiple billions, but it's hard to know because they cycle the money through the system so much. And then Ripple, who kind of didn't do anything to pop that bubble that we all heard from our friends and family, where the banks are going to use it. And the banks were definitely not going to use that token or buy that token up. And so these are things that are laughable to us because we're experienced and we kind of have some familiarity with what's involved. But just if you look at it on a kind of objective level, we can objectively say that all these projects are bad because they've raised so much money now that in order to deliver like a really fantastic return, they would need to basically consume the entire world's economy before they could kind of deliver a kind of 5,000x return. It's just, you know, obviously I'm not being a little bit bombastic there, but my point is that when you consume billions and billions to deliver a protocol, the thing would have to be trillions of dollars large before you would get a fantastic return. And so, yeah, for me, it's sad to see that those projects are still kind of highly priced in the market. And to me, it suggests that the market hasn't fully been gutted at all. Certainly a kind of educated pricing mechanisms. And so, yeah, those are really disappointing kind of data points to me.
Yeah, I'm interested to see over time, and I think regulation might have a pretty large impact on this because it's all so speculative right now. But I am interested to see over time if and when we do concentrate into what I think people would consider to be higher quality crypto assets over some of the assets that, in my opinion, are not high quality or are just severely overvalued. So I think that's going to be something interesting to see pan out. And I know, you know, you had talked about EOS and you had a little bit of a viral occurrence there in the past. So I don't want to go too much into that specific occurrence. But one thing I'm interested in your thoughts about in kind of the EOS, not necessarily EOS versus Ethereum, but in some cases EOS versus Ethereum, but really taking a step back outside of both of kind of the centralization versus decentralization and the scalability kind of pendulum in between. Do you have any thoughts on where, you know, kind of where the sweet spot might align? Because I think, you know, EOS obviously has the heavier degree of centralization, but they're pointing to, hey, we're super scalable right now and we have so many transactions, yada, yada, yada. Whereas Ethereum is, I would say, significantly less scalable at the present time, but is arguably significantly more decentralized than something like EOS. So would be interested in kind of your thought process on where that maybe optimum level of scalability versus decentralization might be.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think I'm smart enough to kind of comment on which system is going to be the best way. But one thing's clear is that what we get are kind of emergent use cases out of just shipping these protocols. So no, I don't think anyone in Ethereum knew that the token was going to be the killer dApp. And that's really what Ethereum is right now. It's this large distributed token ledger. That is a use case that's worked. And Bitcoin gave us one type of discrete digital asset. And Ethereum gave us the ability to kind of describe any digital asset. I actually think that EOS is a kind of as an experiment. Like if you're going to do a network that has distributed proof of stake and try out a bunch of the variables that they're trying, absolutely fantastic to try. And I think it'd be wonderful if they'd raised 40 million and they were shipping this thing and trying it out and engaging with the community. It's just that specific implementation of that dragging of the dial between scalability, security, and decentralization doesn't interest me because it's just so severely overcapitalized and such horrendous execution. So I'm not against EOS as an experiment. I'm against it. I'm against that specific
execution
implementation. So the experiment that I'm most excited to see if it works, or the two, are kind of Cosmos and Dfinity. We don't really know until they launch. And Cosmos is this idea that, like, you know, every app has its own chain instead of all apps on one chain. And that there's a kind of way to swap tokens between these chains using the Cosmos network. And if something like that succeeds, I think it would be a huge contribution to the industry. And we'd be really be moving things from kind of basic kind of currency with Bitcoin and smart contracts, or basic contracts with Ethereum, to kind of actually distributed computing running on a kind of protocol-based token incentivized network. So that's exciting. And Dfinity has a totally different approach, which is to be aware of. It's this idea of creating a random beacon. So this is, I may butcher the explanation here, but I'll do my best. Is say you had a kind of set of 2,000 nodes. You're looking for kind of 400 of them to agree in this system, I believe is called Threshold Relay. And the idea is that they kind of agree and they produce this random number that while you're not sure what the number next number will be, the network always produces the same sequence of numbers. And this becomes like a kind of digital heartbeat. And a cool thing about this is that different parts of the network can, in theory, be kind of out of contact for a while and then reconnect and resync. And so that, again, is another really interesting experiment where, you know, with Cosmos, with kind of one chain for each dApp and Dfinity with an entirely new consensus mechanism, and just to be upfront, you know, both interested in working on top of those protocols, but don't hold any of the tokens. Mm-hmm. I think that those are also really interesting experiments and are kind of correctly capitalized relative to what they've achieved as a team. That's kind of how I see the landscape, but I can't really say what's the right way or wrong way. Yeah. I'm just excited to see more experiments if they're correctly done.
Totally. No, it makes total sense. You know, as we're kind of coming towards the end of the discussion on our end here, I'm not sure maybe if I miss anything that you felt like would be, you know, applicable to anybody listening in regards to maybe balance or what you're building, or just anything maybe that I missed in the discussion. Would love to have your thoughts on that.
Yeah. One thing I'm starting to see that I think is really interesting are these like crypto native business models. So one that's popped up is, Uniswap, which is the idea that you can, for certain tokens that are not listed on other decentralized exchanges and systems, you can fire up mini markets for a token, and then you'll own shares in this market that exists entirely on chain. And as the trading volume occurs backwards and forwards, your shares are kind of accruing more of the fees, and then you can kind of remove those. And so there's going to be, and that's like one example. And then there's people who are doing their entire revenue stream into a DAO, where you can kind of earn share tokens that kind of flow through, and different protocols which allow you to stake certain amounts of your money and kind of earn returns on that. And those are just through occurring entirely within the kind of crypto world, where the revenue is all kind of into sets of smart contracts and your payouts are all in crypto, and it's just not touching the real world at all.
Yeah.
And for me, this is exciting because I think we're actually going to start to see legitimate business investment opportunities where you can look at the kind of cash flow, or I can call it this hash flow, into this crypto native business, purchase a share in it, and then kind of like earn returns or kind of grow, or it'll be growing value in the market because it is kind of operating honestly. And so I'm really excited to start investing in and kind of buying into some of these projects, because I can kind of understand them from a business perspective that they would operate in the real world, but this is just happening entirely on the kind of crypto economic system. And so that's something I'm paying a lot of attention to, and seeing if we can incorporate some of those lessons and balances as we start to generate real revenue.
For sure. And you wrote a blog post on that recently. That was the hash flow and cash flow. That was that, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll link to anybody who's listening right now too. I'll link to that blog post so you can check it out. It's definitely a good read. It's on Medium. So I'll definitely link to that below if you're watching or listening to this. Definitely worth the read. But I really do appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today. And like I said, aside from the blog post, also include a link to your Twitter, to the balance information as well, so anybody can check that out. But really excited to see what you and your team are building, because you guys are really putting an emphasis on, I think, just like legitimacy, cash flow, actually building products that work, and really solid interfaces that are going to increase adoption. So I'm excited to see kind of how you guys continue to advance your own product and advance the industry in general.
Oh, thanks very much. We're just trying to make something that we like to use. So yeah, and if anybody, it's all open source. So if anyone would like to kind of help or contribute, we really welcome open source contributions. And if you're kind of non-technical and want to kind of join the community, we've got this interesting forum, spectrum.chat/balance. And feel, if I could be helpful to any of your listeners and want to kind of ask me any questions, my DMs are wide open, and feel free to message me anytime, night or day. I try to respond to all my DMs, and I'm just twitter.com/RickBurton.
Awesome. Well, I really do appreciate it. Thanks again for the time.
Dude, thank you very much. Appreciate it.